how are you doing? And later on, switch on the TV. They give me the news, they give half truths to me. They give us wise, they feed us lies. How are you doing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When you came, they fabricate. I'm wasted by a little
Uncensored Radio Free America.
Rick Adams is on.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome back to this beginning of the week Monday night broadcast right here on Republic. And I am Rick Adams, your radio avenger, the Paul Revere of talk radio. And we're sounding the alarm. Well, we have a very interesting week, I think, this week coming up. And tomorrow night, let's see, we have on Paul Tepeti. Polka Face, is that right? Polka Face, yeah. And their interesting tribulations that they are encountering with the Thought Police and their band. And then Wednesday night, Lindsey Williams will be back with us to see what he knows about the upcoming date of March 20th and what will happen with Iran. And we have other guests booked later in the week, I believe. And tonight, we have back by very popular demand. Been about a month or so now. We have Eustace Mullins. Hello, Eustace.
Oh, hello there.
How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm glad you're having Lindsey Williams on. I haven't seen Lindsey. We toured together for years, but I haven't seen him for about 10 years.
Oh, my. It's about time we hooked up you with him and get you together again.
Oh, he has lots to say about the oil situation.
Yeah, yeah. And he's been with us quite frequently now. So he'll be back to Wednesday night. I'm sorry. And we'll be talking about what he thinks may happen. I know his tapes are getting out there, his videos, truth. So people are getting a little angry and a little upset, and that makes the criminals in Washington a little bit angry and upset.
And, well, criminals don't like to get caught.
No, they don't. And they don't like to, you know, have people catch on to what they're doing and
follow the evidence,
follow the trail. Right, Eustace?
Oh, that's exactly right.
And speaking of criminals, you have fought many in your lifetime, and you will continue tonight.
Yes, I've got a $900 million lawsuit against the state of Virginia right now.
Uh-huh.
They've been harassing me for the last 3 years.
Yep. And that was what, over the driver's license?
The driving license. And they actually ran me out of the state. I had to go up to Ohio and have that for a month.
Yeah. Yeah, we interviewed you from there.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, you found me.
Tonight,
luckily, the government did.
Yeah, tonight we're going to discuss a number of things, but one of the things you wanted to bring up was this story in the Washington Post, yesterday or so, on the Homeland Security Department being in a place that you spent some time.
Oh, yes.
And we'll talk about that, and
I've got a full copy
to.
It's a two-page article, and I copied the whole thing today.
Good.
I've got it right here.
Good. All right. Excellent. Excellent. We'll do that, and we'll invite people to call in later. And now, do you still have your website? Is it up and running again?
No, it's not running at the present time.
Okay.
There's been some interference there.
You have, huh?
Yeah.
All right. And has anyone volunteered to help you who's involved in this particular endeavor?
No one has shown any interest in it at all.
Well, I'm surprised. We'll see what we can do tonight. I'm sure we can dredge up somebody.
Very good.
I'm sure we will. Absolutely. And our number, as ever and always, ladies and gentlemen, is toll-free, 800-313-9443. We are working on having the Syrian ambassador on the program soon, and that's another possibility that may turn up before the end of the week. All right, Rick Adams with Eustace Mullins. Those of you who don't know Eustace by now, well, for you newcomers, we'll give you a quick recap when we come back. I'm Rick Adams. Stay tuned.
Get back at 'em with Rick Adams, the Radio Avenger on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
All right, we are back to begin the program on this Monday evening with Eustace Mullins. Eustace Mullins is a man of obviously much learning, much knowledge inside of government, and a man who has lived for the past 83 years knowing whereof he speaks, because he did live through history. Eustace, for those newcomers, people who are just listening to the radio tonight for the first time, and we have a lot of them, just give us a brief synopsis of your story and your mentor and what happened to you, and we'll go from there.
Well, I went to Washington to go to art school in 1948.
Uh-huh.
And I was on the Capitol Hill every day for the next 3 years, and I met everybody. And I worked for Senator McCarthy and other people, and I found it a very stimulating environment. And you see, in 1948, you still had a lot of good Americans in Washington. They're all gone now. I can't recommend anybody at the present time. But there were some really decent people there.
And what happened to you when you started becoming a follower of Ezra Pound, right?
Well, I was the only person ever fired from the Library of Congress for political reasons. And I sued them on that grounds, but the federal courts threw it right out.
Mm-hmm. And on what basis did you sue, and what basis did they throw it out? Do you remember all this stuff?
Oh, yes. I have the records of the whole thing.
Good.
Well, they claimed I was only a probationary employee, although I'd worked there for 6 months. But I'd been personally hired by the Library of the Congress himself, Luther Evans, who heard me give a reading on poetry at the commencement ceremony in Washington, and he insisted I come to the library. So I certainly was glad to do that, because it was the place I wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Then later on, he had to get drunk in order to fire me. He had a bottle of Virginia Gentleman bourbon and his desk drawer. He kept pulling it out and taking a snort at it. He never offered me any.
Mm-hmm.
And the Virginia Gentleman and bourbon is produced by my former roommate in college, Robert E. Lee IV.
Ah.
And Bob married the heiress to that bourbon fortune. And they sold a part of their land off as the suburb of Reston in Washington. It was one of the biggest real estate deals in history.
Right.
And it's still flourishing today and going up in price every day.
So now get back to your job there and what happened to you, why you were dismissed.
Well, I was dismissed because Ezra has always tried to get me to do more things. And I became the American correspondent of the Social Creditor newspaper of England.
Mm-hmm.
And that was why they fired me, because they claimed the Social Creditor was prejudiced. You see, Ezra was one of the founders of the Social Credit movement, and C.H. Douglas, his founder, was his closest friend. And so I got very active in that, and it was all about the bankers, and so that didn't sit well with a lot of the people on Capitol Hill.
So you sealed your own death warrant, so to speak.
Oh, I really did. I walked right into the trap, and they sprung it.
Yeah, they don't like people like that.
No, no, and they go after you. The thing is, they send a hitman right away.
Anybody investigating the banks, as you had done in the Federal Reserve System, certainly you put your neck on the chopping block. There's no
question. They had Ezra locked up in that insane asylum with that trial, and he kept him there 13 and a half years.
See, now, they couldn't do that today. Today, they do it differently. They put you in jail, they charge you with genocide, and then they feed you poisons and give you a heart attack, like they did with Milosevic.
Oh, Milosevic, yeah. Well, he was in an unfortunate position. There were a lot of people after him.
Well, I know one
things
that's
like
coming.
That still happen today. Well, McCarthy himself was absolutely crucified.
Yeah, but he was also murdered, though.
And murdered, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a copy of his death certificate.
Yep.
I was given it in Wisconsin several years ago while attending ceremonies at his graveside.
Right.
And the National Institute of Health determined it was a homicide. He was injected with a massive dose of hepatitis germs, which killed him.
Hepatitis B, was it?
Hepatitis C? B, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, no question about it.
And nobody ever got a dose like that. It killed him dead.
Now, the reason for that was because he was in the midst of rehabilitating himself and his the character assassination against him, and he was planning to come back strong.
Oh, and, he was, because he had a tremendous following all over the country.
Exactly. So
he was the most powerful politician at the time I knew him.
Right.
Every politician in the United States was terrified of Joe McCarthy.
That's what they say, and rightfully so.
Well, rightfully so, because he was the only politician who spoke directly to the people about the things that concerned them.
Yeah, 20 years of treason was his famous speech that he gave.
Oh,
and, yes. And it was treason under the Democrats, and then he found that under the Republicans it was even more treason under Eisenhower.
It was the Republicans that got him. It was the cabal of George Calvin Lodge. And Richard Nixon is the one that did him in.
Yeah, and of course we had, we had the senators, what was his name there, Stu Symington from Missouri.
Oh, yeah, Stu Symington was really after him.
And you had Flanders from Vermont.
Oh, Flanders was one of the leaders,
Chase.
Certainly.
Yeah, you had a bunch of Republicans that went to town. Because just like now, they were protecting their leader, Eisenhower Bush. And they didn't care about the country as long as they stood behind their man. That's all that was mattering to them.
Well,
so
it
was a typical treasonous example.
Oh, yes. Well, Eisenhower was so terrified of McCarthy that they kept demanding that he denounce McCarthy publicly, and he never dared to open his mouth one time.
No, he did the same thing with Robert Welch. You know, when Robert Welch wrote the book, The Politician, he ignored him.
Oh, yes.
Ignored because every word in that book was true. If anything, it was an understatement for those who don't know.
Oh, yes. I have a copy right up in my bedroom right now.
Yeah, and in World War II, what Eisenhower had done was absolutely treasonous, and Patton was well aware of it, wasn't he, huh? General Patton?
Oh, yes, well, if Patton had lived to come back to the United States, Eisenhower would have never seen the White House.
He would have seen the probably the outhouse or the gulag.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting because Patton did speak too much. He did boast of what he was going to do, resign totally from the U.S. military rather than retire and spill the beans, and that was his death knell, too.
Oh, yes.
That so-called accident that he had.
Well, he tells his diary they tried to kill him 8 times.
Yeah, he escaped right up until the 9th. I guess he only had 8 lives, huh?
Apparently 8 lives was it.
Yeah. That's
he was a brave man. He was a soldier like Douglas MacArthur.
Had you ever met him, Patton?
No. I met some of his relatives.
Yeah,
his son and his grandson are still active on Capitol Hill.
Don't forget Lawrence Patton McDonald.
Oh, yes.
Yes, indeed. Another great American named after him. And he, too, met with his fate in that 007 crash over the Pacific.
Yeah, that was a real assassination.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and Ronald Reagan, our great fearless conservative leader, would not so much as recognize Larry McDonald's presence on that plane, that a U.S. congressman was murdered. He said nothing about him.
Oh,
nothing.
No, he never opened his mouth.
That was our fearless, courageous, anti-communist Ronald Reagan, huh?
Well, the John Birch Society has never gotten over Larry McDonald's death.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was the finish of John Birch.
Well, you know, there's various theories about what happened, but the fact of the matter is that everyone who knew Larry McDonald knew that he was a man of honor and principle.
Oh, yeah.
And, he was a great freedom fighter, one that always voted against the New World Order, not just occasionally. He always
he was the spark plug of the Birch Society, and after he died, it began to go downhill.
Mm-hmm. But now, you know, going back in time, in your case, Eustace, you had written what? How many books up until the present did you actually compose?
At about 14.
14?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And they're all in demand. That's the amazing thing. And they have never been reviewed in any publication.
Yeah.
And they've never been advertised anywhere because I had no money to advertise the book anyway.
And how did you get them published at the time? Who was your publisher? Do you publish them yourself?
They were self-published. They call it vanity publishing, but it's not vanity publishing at all. It's the Iron Curtain over the publishing industry out of New York City with the Virginia Kirkus Review.
Right.
The Kirkus Review only recommends the books which librarians can buy all over the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So they kill any book that has a chance because it never gets off the ground.
Right. Did you know Taylor Caldwell?
No, I didn't, but she was really a great American.
She was a very strong patriot. She, too, had befriended Joe McCarthy, and she paid a price for it. Now, when she, because she came out of the closet as an anti-communist patriot, her, you know, her, some of her materials were savaged and panned by the New York Times, but when she wrote under a pseudonym, as she said, then her books were praised highly and recommended. They didn't know it was she that wrote the book.
Yeah, people have told me for years I should write under a pseudonym, but I've never done it because I just put my name on it and let it go.
Amen. I think there's a lot of admiration to that. When we come back from the break coming up, I want you to tell us about this Homeland Security article.
Oh, yes, I'm going to. I'll tell you the inside story on that deal.
Sure. We'll do it when we come back. And let's invite people to hop aboard anytime you'd like to. We'll take your call at 800-313-9443. And there must be somebody out there that can, in his area, Virginia, that maybe can stop by Eustace Mullins' place and give him a hand with his...
Oh, yes, a lot of good people.
This is the
birthplace of the revolution, right here in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia.
Yes. It was two groups.
It was the Scotch-Irish Presbyterians, and it was the Puritans of New England.
Right.
Those are the two groups.
Excellent.
And together they numbered about 120,000 people. Now, when you realize that only 120,000 people supported the American Revolution, that's a pretty... That's about
4%. That's all it takes, doesn't it? All right, we'll be back. Eustace, stay where you are. Rick Adams, we shall return. All right, now we are back. We are returned to Uncensored Radio Free America. Eustace, when you picked up the Washington Post the other day, what struck you right in the face?
Well, it hit me on top of the head because it was Saturday, it was Saturday morning's Washington Post, and on the front page was a two-page story about the Homeland Security has finally found that address. This story of the Post gave the present address of Home Security, which is Nebraska Avenue. And Nebraska Avenue is right below the Capitol, and it's one of those dangerous places in Washington, D.C. today. You wouldn't want to walk in the street alone there in broad daylight. But they bug congressmen on that very block all the time. That's the kind of security they have in Washington.
Yeah. So what's this plan all about now?
Well, you see, St. Elizabeth was shutting down, and somebody at Home Security said, well, we don't really have an address for these temporary offices.
Yeah.
And so why don't we just take over St. Elizabeth? Sound like a great idea. But they forgot one thing, and that is that the 176 acres of St. Elizabeth Hospital represents the last piece of undeveloped land in the entire District of Columbia. And it also has a commanding position. It overlooks the entire city. So it's the most valuable piece of real estate in Washington. It's worth over $100 million. And so Home Security will never go to St. Elizabeth because the realtors are going to get in and make it one of the biggest deals of all time.
So that was a blooper.
Yeah, it was a blooper. Well, it sounded like a good idea. Home Security should have a good address. It was a nice address. But then... the realtors have been watching the St. Elizabeth situation over the last 5 years, and they were just about ready to pounce and get that land, and they'll get it now.
Well, that's interesting. And what was Mr. Chertoff's position on all of this?
Total silence.
Uh-huh.
Not one word out of him. And the story appeared in the Metro section of the Washington Post on Saturday morning and disappeared totally after that. It's never been mentioned anywhere since then.
Yeah.
In any paper.
And that was just that one issue of the Post. You noticed.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the
big city newspapers often run a story in the morning and jerk it later in the afternoon, and it never appears again. That all happens quite frequently.
Well, you know, the thought of putting people, the offices there and... headquarters, maybe we could put it in a former psychiatric hospital, doesn't really hit me the wrong way.
No, no.
I mean, it seems to fit, doesn't it?
Well, the comics would have a field day with the story, but they never got hold of it, so it's gone now.
Yeah, yeah. It's incredible. But that's just one more example of the insanity that governs Washington. You know, I'm looking at the brand new edition of the Forward newspaper, the oldest Jewish newspaper in the country.
Oh, yes.
And here we've got Dick Cheney right on the front page with a headline, Pro-Israel Activist Cheer Cheney. Cheney has just spoken to AIPAC. He and a bunch of others.
Oh, yes, he spoke to AIPAC. And
John Bolton.
And that is the governing part of Washington, right?
Right.
AIPAC is.
Now, these guys and gals were applauding Cheney like he had never been applauded before. Why? Because he's threatening to level Iran.
Oh, yes. Nuke Iran. That's what he wants to do.
At the least provocation, though. I mean, there's no provocation at all.
There is no provocation.
And even if there weren't a provocation, Cheney says we have to go after Iran because Iran might be a very potent antidote to Israel someday. It might very well be a very potent foe able to defend herself against Israel as Israel seeks to expand her borders. As you know, this is the first time ever now, Mr. Olmert of the Kadima Party, Ariel Sharon's buddy, has said we're going to define our borders in Israel. We're going to clearly define our borders encircling all of Jerusalem.
Oh,
and that's the goal.
Intend to do that.
That is the goal, and that is prophetic. That is prophetic, you know, Houston, because Jerusalem will be surrounded by armies.
Oh, yes.
And which armies will surround Jerusalem? That isn't going to be the Roman armies. It isn't going to be the European armies. It will be the Israeli army, siphoning off everything from the city, cordoning it off to the Palestinians with this 30, 40, 50-foot high apartheid wall, and nobody is saying a word about it. It's going on just as if it was never proposed. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, the people in Israel are aware of that area's history, and the greatest empire in that entire area was the Persian Empire, which is Iran today.
Yes.
So they're looking, the Persian Empire is looking down their throats, and the Israelis want to get rid of that threat.
Well, they did the same thing with Iraq.
Oh, they certainly did.
And they've destroyed, we've been doing a good job for them, destroying all of their museums, all of their artifacts, all of their culture, all of their professors, the people that made Iraq a very interesting, a very knowledgeable nation, and a growing, prosperous nation in the 1990s.
Yeah, the oldest Christians in the world have been wrecked. They don't realize that a Christian rural community was actually founded and built in Iraq.
What a pity. What a pity. All right, we got Barney lined up to talk to you already, and others can join. We're looking for some help, by the way, for Houston to get him back up online. 800-313-9443. Houston Mullins, my guest. I'm Rick Adams. Uncensored Radio. Free America continues.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Rick Adams is back. Live, uncensored, Radio Free America continues on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Indeed, indeed we are. My guest is none other than Eustace Mullins, author extraordinaire, and also a man of many words, as you can see. He knows his subject matters, and at 83 years old, he has the mind of a sharp intelligentsia agent. How's that, Eustace?
Oh, that sounds very good.
You like that?
You forgot to remind people that I had the advantage of being educated at St. Elizabeth's Hospital for the Insane.
Mm-hmm.
I got 3 years of the greatest education anyone got in their life. I had 3 hours of daily lectures from Ezra Pound for 3 years.
Uh-huh. So you were following the wrong people. You should have been following Ike and Adlai Stevenson and all the good folk down there.
Oh, I ignored all those people. In fact, all of my friends at Washington on Capitol Hill they pretty well ignored Ike and Italy and so forth. They just said Ike even considered they existed. They never mentioned their names.
Absolutely. You want to take some calls now?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Eustace? All right. I think we've got Barney from Maryland, not too far from you. Barney, you're on the program with Eustace Mullins.
Yeah. The more I read about military history, the more I'm convinced that all wars and revolutions are staged by the one-worlders. The one-worlders were their yes-men, direct both sides of a war.
Mm-hmm.
Yes men will deliberately send their men into staged events designed to cause casualties on their own forces, for effect, like creating dramatics in a play. The one-worlders will create food shortages, equipment and material shortages, economic crises, provide satellite pictures, weapons, etc. to both sides, where necessary, to prolong the fighting and hardships. In 1928, money was plentiful. Bricklayers went to work in patent leather shoes and silk shirts. Shoeshine boys played the stock market. Then the economy collapsed. For 10 years, little or no money was available for food, fuel, medicine, dental equipment, and clothing, shoes, and everything. Suddenly, World War II was starting. Billions of dollars were created out of nothing. Thousands of airplanes, ships, uniforms, weapons, etc. were manufactured, implemented, and destroyed. Millions of people were killed or wounded. Militaries were manipulated like toy soldiers. The only way the world will ever be at peace is by eliminating the one-worlders.
What are you reading from, Barney?
I just made some notes to go by.
Okay, you're reading your own writing, huh?
Yep.
All right, well, that's good. I mean, Eustace, do you find fault with anything he said?
I don't find fault at all because ideology largely has disappeared from wars. In fact, Daniel Bell, who's a well-known scholar, wrote a book at the end of World War II called The End of Ideology. And there's been very little ideology talked about ever since. Because there is nobody has an ideology anymore.
Well,
here's the communists are going.
The only ideology they have is to themselves. It's how to stay in power and grab and hold on to it.
Yeah, so agreed. That's all it is.
Yeah, it's right. Exactly. For the love of money is the root of all evil, huh?
Yes, indeed.
Comes right back to what Jesus himself said, huh?
Yes, and Jesus really knew it all.
He did. He knew the scribes and the Pharisees, didn't he?
He certainly did. He lived with them.
And he knows who they are today. It's the same group of people.
He has never changed his ideology. In fact, the last thing that Christ ever said in Matthew 28, he said, I am with you always. And he is with you.
Even till the end of the age.
He will always be there.
Right. Exactly. See, the age is what he was talking about, the age when Satan controls the world. And, of course, when that's over with, then his millennial kingdom begins. So that's the end of Satan for a while. Put him away for 1,000 years.
Oh, yeah.
We can put Rumsfeld and Cheney and the rest of them in that same prison and bind them for 1,000 years. I'll tell you, that wouldn't be a bad thought.
No, it's a very healthy thing to do.
Thank you. Barney, are you? Do you have any other questions or comments for Eustace Mullins?
The only way I think we ever accomplish defeating the one-worlders is by doing away with our greed, our false pride, and prejudice against one another. That's it.
All right. Very good. Excellent. Thank you, Barney. Appreciate that. We got another fellow from Maryland. Mike. Hi, Mike. You're on the program.
I tell you, that's a tough act to follow, you know?
You'd have
that guy as a guest. That's some words of wisdom right there.
There you go.
And I tell you what, Eustace Mullins is one of the most interesting people I've ever heard on talk radio.
Yes, he is.
And I mean, it's just, you're just incredible, and I'm not trying to buddy you up or anything, but I tell you what, how do I get copies of your books?
Well, I have a few copies here. Some of them are out of print, but I have my Murder by Injection, the history of the American Medical Association. I have a writ for martyrs, which is a list of crimes committed by government agents against the American people. And I have my, of course, my Secrets of the Federal Reserve is still available.
Mm-hmm.
Can I get them at a bookstore, or would I have to get them through you?
You have to get them through me because the bookstore has never handled my books.
Yeah, you can write directly to Hustis, and he'll give his address a little bit later on in the program, right?
Okay, and you said that you need some help of some kind?
Well,
I had a website. I opened it about a year ago.
You need financial help or help down at your place or whatever?
I guess financial help because it's shut down right now.
Okay, well, if I buy your books, I'll kick in a few dollars as well, you know,
all right.
Get the address.
Fine.
So basically you're talking about Joe McCarthy. Basically, how long has the government, Nixon was after him? It's because they're closet communists or what? Joe McCarthy, how infested was and is our government with communists?
Washington was the headquarters of the World Communist Operation from 1933 to 1945.
Washington, D.C. It's incredible.
And that's all been documented.
I don't say that lightly. All of our books document that.
And now the Venona Intercepts came right out and just told us what we had already known. The Soviet Union had agents all through the government of the United States from the 30s right through World War II. In fact, it's safe to say that the communists ran World War II, didn't they?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And in fact, Averell Harriman, who was the boss of the Bush boys, he replaced Stalin in 1944.
Mm-hmm.
We sent him to Russia as the American ambassador to Russia.
He actually
ran the entire Soviet government in 1943 and 1944.
Stalin
had a nervous breakdown.
And if I told somebody that, because I think you're a person of honor, and I believe you research everything you do, but if I tell somebody that, they'll look at me like I'm crazier than an outhouse rat.
And that's because you don't see it on the History Channel very often, if at all. You won't get it in your newspapers because they, too, are bought and paid for. You're not going to get it from anybody else like Hannity or anyone else because they are part of the deception.
Well,
you're only going to get it, really, by doing your own research.
And
anyone who wants to do their own research can find the facts. They're all there.
I get it for people. Do you have the document in your book, so Abel Harriman did that?
Yes.
That's all documented.
Well,
yes,
Wait, get your address, because I want to buy every single book that you've written, and you've written extensively about Ezra Pound as well, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. My biography of Ezra Pound is the only authorized biography of Ezra Pound. It's been out of print for several years.
Well, I need to read some of his books as well, so I'll tell you
what. Oh, yes, his books are available.
All right, I'll tell you. Well, thank you very much. It's been
an honor
talking
to you. You're welcome. Well, thank you. Now, stay tuned. We'll give the address in a few minutes where you can write directly to Hustis, in lieu of his website not being up right now. We'll see if we can get that straightened out for you. Paul in Florida, you are now on the program with us. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Rick. Nice to hear you, Eustace, again.
Thank you.
He said something that rung a bell with me. He mentioned that Ezra Pound, I believe, was the founder of a social credit party. Now,
Social creditor party. That was to give the world a sound monetary system.
Oh,
which
I
is a very ambitious program, but it worked in Europe, and it worked in the province of Alberta in Canada.
Yeah.
They had a social credit government there, and it worked very well.
Yeah, so the reason it rung a bell with me was in the 60s and 70s, I used to go up to Quebec province. I was originally from Massachusetts. I used to go up to Quebec province, and, of course, you read the newspapers up there, and I could speak and read French, and there was a party up there called the Social Credit Party, and I didn't understand what the term social credit meant.
Well, that was the Social Credit Party, all right.
Yeah, Quebec, they call them the Creditistes. And they, I don't understand what the term social credit means in a political context. And again, if you could maybe expand upon what the party actually stood for.
Oh, well, it's a very sound, there are books out about it, and it's a very soundly built a constructed party. See, C.H. Douglas was an engineer.
Yeah.
And so he devised a monetary party which is based on sound monetary principles.
Which means a currency backed by gold or silver.
Yes.
I would assume.
Which the United States was designed to have in our Constitution.
Oh, yeah, it's right there under coinage.
Oh, yes.
I think, what is it, 1/35th of an ounce of gold is supposed to be $1, something like that.
Oh, yes. They set all the limits and everything, and it worked very well for a few weeks.
Well, as I understand it, there was no inflation whatsoever from the time of the Washington administration up until the Lincoln administration.
Yes.
Okay, there was no inflation. You paid the same for a loaf of bread in 1855 as you did in 1800. And they managed to finance the government without any income tax.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Now, all the politicians today would probably have to do is find out how the heck did they do that without it. I don't know if they already, maybe it was state sales taxes, I don't know. But there was no income tax, and everything seemed to go, you know, you had the Mexican War in the War of 1812, and they seemed to be able to finance that okay.
Oh, no, they had no problems at all.
Yeah. But anyway, thank you for the information. I never knew what social credit meant exactly. But,
yes.
Yeah,
there
you
go.
All right, thank you very
Paul,
much.
Very good questions, by the way. Thank you. 1-800-313-9443 is our number right here at the Republic Broadcasting Network. And I'm Rick Adams, Radio Avenger, the program Uncensored, Radio Free America. Where else would you get information like this? It's not standard fare on national talk radio, to say the least. Now we'd be getting into real issues instead of contrived issues, Eustace. And they wouldn't want that for all the tea in Red China.
No, they put out disinformation. They get everybody to arguing about trivialities.
Mm-hmm. By the way, before we take the next call, Art in Kansas, I want to mention the previous caller mentioned, was everybody in Washington a communist? And, you know, that's really not true.
It's not true.
No,
I knew many government employees who were very dedicated Americans.
Well,
but
not
they were
only
low-level employees.
But there were a lot that were fellow travelers without being communists or members of the party.
It
wasn't the communists that were doing the damage. It was the so-called anti-communists.
Oh, it certainly was.
You follow what I'm saying?
Oh, yes.
And it was the people, you had Prince Bernhard in the Netherlands financing, the communist empire here in the United States, personally involved with the Rockefellers in bringing down McCarthy and so forth. So, you know, their toes were being stepped on.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Dick Cheney was Rockefeller's personal congressman for many years.
So
he's into this up to his neck.
Well, Dick Cheney boasted, you know, he said, when I was a congressman from Wyoming, I never, never told the folk back home, he said, that I was involved so heavily with the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilats. He said it wouldn't go over, that's for sure.
Not in Wyoming, no.
No.
It wouldn't go over today.
But what he was saying was the people back home didn't know what the heck was going on any more than the man in the moon. They knew that his rhetoric sounded nice when he was a congressman. He sounded like a rough and tough and ready conservative, and he voted right at the time on most of the issues. See, that was his beginning. When he finally got off the Congress business, got right into a position in the administration, that's where the action started to begin, the real action, you see, for the globalists.
Well, you know, Rockefeller had his biggest ranch in Wyoming there, outside of Jackson Hole.
Mm.
And I've been through it today. It's still enormous.
Yes.
You know, Clinton visited there.
Uh-huh.
And it's quite a place. But Cheney was John D. Rockefeller's personal congressman for about 30 years.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Not surprising. Art in Kansas, what say ye?
Hello there.
Hello.
Eustace, I cannot tell you what an honor it is to speak with you. You have done so much.
I'm just getting started.
Oh, I hope so. I want to tell you, I sang at St. Elizabeth's in the 30s as part of a church choir one Christmas, and I had no clue where I was.
Oh, yes. It was a very strange place.
Oh. Now, do you know what the connection is between John Hinckley and the Bush family?
Oh, yes. Hinckley had dinner with one of Bush's brothers.
Yeah?
The night before the regular attack.
Yeah, I thought that's what it was.
Yes.
But it's such a weird connection and nobody ever makes anything of it.
Mm-hmm. No, they don't. And, well, originally they all were in the oil business together. That was the basis of it. It was a business connection.
Yeah?
There was no ideology apparent whatsoever.
Huh. Well, there are just too many connections that just go unexplained.
Oh, yeah, they're well-known connections. They're not secret at all.
I know. Well, keep it up.
Art, You say you were at St. Elizabeth's many years ago?
No, I sang there.
Yeah? That's what I meant. I didn't mean you were a patient, but you sang. Yeah.
Well, people can believe that anymore. I never was a patient anyway, but I was there every day. But it was a gloomy place, I'll tell you. I quaked a little bit when the first time I visited Ezra Pound there. Mm-hmm. That was the gloomiest place I ever set foot in my life.
Yeah. I remember all the nuns with their flying headdresses on.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I think it was
a whole Episcopal setup. Mm-hmm.
I thought you were going to say you remember the flying nuns.
No.
Sally Field. Okay. All right. I get you. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for your contribution. How do you like that, Eustace? A lot of people have read your work.
Oh, that's very interesting, yes.
For a man like you who have been, you've been self-published and you did your own PR, basically, you certainly got your works around, didn't you? People were craving them. And still
are. Oh,
yes.
They always have craved our books. It's really very flattering to know that people are so demanding your books all the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, your books are easy to read. They're very jam-packed with information. And
well, I loaded them all because Ezra taught me to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, I wrote very much tighter than Ezra Pound ever wrote.
Is
because
that right?
He was really a poet, and of course the poet writes a little looser than a historian.
Right. So it rubbed off on you, and now you have continued all these years to be a survivor, a real survivor, huh?
Oh, I just had my birthday the other day.
Hey,
I finally turned 83.
Amen. All right. Bless you. We'll be back. Eustace Mullins and your phone calls. I'm Rick Adams. Stay tuned.
Don't feel like the Lone Ranger. You've got the Radio Avenger on your side.
Hey, Rick Adams, come on. Hey, turn your horse radio on. Rick Adams is on. Ouch.
Yes, he is. And I am he. And his special guest tonight is backed by very popular demand, Eustace Mullins. And we have more callers on the line. Let us take Steve in Texas. Hello, Steve.
Yeah, hi, Rick.
Hello.
Hi, Eustace.
Oh.
And you were talking about where you can get copies of your book. Everybody copies your book. The first person would be Edward Griffin, and you can get copies by different names. They have the name C. Wrote. Murder by Injection, and he wrote World Without Cancer, and Creature from Jekyll Island. So your copies of your books are available everywhere.
Oh, yes.
I prefer that people would buy them from you so that, you know, they would be paying homage to the author of the book as opposed to somebody that just picked it up.
Oh, well, when Griffin's book came out, I was lecturing around the country a lot. People would always ask me, what do you think of Griffin's book? And I would say, well, it's impeccably researched. It's every word in it is true.
You want to know.
Very well paraphrased.
Well, I never had to read the book because I'd written it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about the book, The Fearful Master, which, was that a plagiarist, too? Or?
I don't know that one.
I don't know. Well, that's on the United Nations by Griffin.
Oh, that, I don't know where he got that.
That was, his first book, I think. 1962, was it, or somewhere?
Oh, yeah, he's been quite prolific.
Yeah.
Turns about, well, you know, actually, the John Birch Society published Creature from Jekyll Island to punish me because I had criticized them.
Mm-hmm.
And they sold 300,000 copies of that book.
Yep.
What book was that?
The Creature from Jekyll Island.
Oh, okay.
On the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right. Okay. Anything else, Steve?
Well, you know, he's the best guest you have, so have him on at least once a week.
We try, now that he's 83. Sure. All right. Maybe I'll have him take over.
Quite a good man.
I got all I can handle right now.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it. He does. We all do. Yes, Eustace, you managed to bring them out, and we are going to continue into the next hour with more calls, 800-313-9443. You know, this this deal with the United Arab Emirates, with Bush and the Dubai ports, it's interesting to see the connection between, you know, the Bush family and the United Arab Emirates happens to be in the investment firm of the Carlyle Group.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, they're everywhere.
Oh, yes.
They're everywhere, but particularly with Papa Bush and Baby Bush. Papa Bush served as the senior advisor, you remember. And so Lou Dobbs has been doing quite an interesting little reportage on this deal, talking about the fact that the Carlyle Group is heavily invested in that particular region. No wonder Bush has decided they are the ones to court. You know, Lou Dobbs better be careful, because he's not going to be around much longer.
Yeah, he's stepping on some toes.
He is. He's stepping on some real big toes, and I tell you, he's not going to be around at CNN much longer. But anyway, we hope that won't happen, but we know how things happen when the big money people get involved, and that's what this whole thing is all about, big money.
Well,
big
Lou
bucks.
Dobbs, that was a good story when he sees one.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that is a terrific story.
Well, we'll be back to talk more about these stories. And you, our callers, with our guest, Eustace Mullins, just turned 83. Happy birthday, Eustace. All right, we'll be back with more Uncensored Radio Free America. This is Rick Adams.
Uncensored. Radio Free America. Another exciting, informative hour is warming up. Rick Adams is on fire.
Yes, and we have Eustace Mullins, our guest tonight, once again. And we'll take more calls. 800-313-9443 is the number. Before we do, Eustace, what is your take right now on as far as the situation with Iran is concerned? Do you think there will be an attack on Iran this month?
We don't have the money or the troops to attack Iran. We'll be lucky if we ever get out of Iraq, much less Iran.
Do you think there will be a move to put more economic isolationism against Iran?
Probably. There'll be harassing moves, because these are moves that Israel comes up with to go after Iran. But they really... Israel cannot take out Iran, even with the American assistance.
Well, politically, it's pretty tough. They have America do most of their work for them.
Oh, they do have it. They do it all.
They do just about everything, don't they, huh?
Oh, yes.
And yet, yeah, as you point out, they box themselves into a corner, because here, you know, the world can't be that dumb to see that Iran is being chastised and isolated, you know, and, you know, ostracized for allegedly wanting to do what Israel has already done with impunity and gotten away with.
Oh, yes, Israel is the biggest nuclear power in the Middle East already.
And one of the three in the world.
Oh, yes.
You know, right at the top of that ladder of atomic power and nukes that are aimed at, by the way, at European cities, we're told, by one of the people who is in the Israeli government, just in case they decide to get out of line, they can send a few intercontinental ballistic missiles across oceans. Meanwhile, we're concerned with Iran. And yet, George Bush unashamedly went to India to bestow them with a gift of nuclear proliferation in violation of the nuclear non-proliferation draft. I mean, this is outrageous.
Well, that was all done through Bernard Baruch, you see. They put Bernard Baruch in charge of the Atomic Energy Commission.
Originally, yeah.
And Israel became the biggest atomic power in the world through that. Through Bernard Baruch.
But imagine, I mean, how in the world, Eustace, can you, with a straight face, tell the world that we can't allow Iran to dabble in nuclear technology, but we're going to expand India's ability to do so. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, it
makes sense if you understand who's behind it. And again, okay. It does come back to the Zionist ambition of having India armed and Pakistan armed and fighting each other rather than the Islamic world being able to threaten Israel. So there is a reason for it. There is a modus, if you will.
Well, Mossad has kept Pakistan and India fighting for years.
Yeah, and they murdered President Zia, you remember, in Pakistan.
Well, that's right.
This is going back a couple of decades now. But they still did not prevent the Pakistanis from getting the bomb as well.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of time before any other country will have the ability, if you will, to have either nukes or whatever bombs they want. In fact, it doesn't have to be nuclear. We have a number of other even more or as deadly a weaponry in the arsenal that one can imagine. You say it's not just nuclear bombs or missiles pointed at any city, but it very well could be other means and other opportunities. That's the danger. You see, the real problem is containing those that already have the nuclear bomb, including the United States and the Soviet Union and China and North Korea and all of these other rogue states. All right, we shall return with more Eustace Mullins, Charlie and Gene and you on rbnlive.com. This is Rick Adams. We'll return. We are back again with the ever popular or unpopular, depending on whom you're speaking to, Eustace Mullins. Isn't that right, Eustace?
Oh, yes. Well known, anyway.
You're nefarious. You're notorious in certain areas, and those are the areas that we don't want to go into.
Oh, yes.
Not that kind of crowd, huh? All right, let's take more calls now lined up for you. Charlie in Austin, hello. Welcome to the program.
Hello, gentlemen. I'm enjoying the show. And Eustace, you had mentioned earlier that we wouldn't go into Iran from lack of funds. Could you see it in your reasoning, if we were to have some 911 attack of some sort, either here or one of our allies, I guess you would say, could you see them getting funding to go into Iran at that point?
I don't see anything like that coming up in the near future, because we haven't even got the military strength to respond to it right now.
You couldn't see a mandatory army or a draft?
A draft.
Well, it could come to that, but manpower-wise, a draft is not really in the cards right now.
I see. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. It certainly would take some time to get training, too.
Oh, it will indeed.
You know, basic training and then beyond into special forces and so forth. But, you can't fault them for trying, though. I mean, they're certainly...
No, they're ambitious. They're always ambitious.
They're ambitious, yeah. They certainly want war. And you could see it on George Bush's face, Rumsfeld's face. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, they
these
lie.
Are,
they
these
lie.
Are the war hawks.
These are the chicken hawks.
Chicken war hawks. Chicken war hawks.
They don't want to serve. Most of them don't serve, have never served.
And they have never served. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, a few of them have, but I wonder who they serve. That's my question. What were they serving in the Israeli army or, you know, the Robert Kagans and the Richard Pearls and the Paul Wolfowitzes?
Richard Pearl is known as the Black Prince. And,
The Dark Prince, yeah.
The Dark Prince, yeah.
Yeah, Prince of Darkness, they call
Prince
him.
Prince of Darkness.
Michael Collins Piper, who's with us now on the network, and he used that phrase quite a bit in his books and writing.
Well, I think Richard Pearl is very proud of that title. The Prince of Darkness.
Well, he wanted to go to war with the Soviet Union, ironically, you know, an all-out war.
Oh, yes.
And these people are really mad, you know, because they've been doing this for over a century, creating wars that were not in America's best interest. Harmed America, harmed our people we were supposed to be helping, and yet they never cease thinking of ways to do that, to go to war. For whatever reason they can come up with, flimsy or not, they come up with an excuse.
The program for the 21st century.
That's it. PNAC.
Yeah.
There you go. And, you know, the tragedy is it's out there for people to look up. You don't have to be a genius to figure it out.
No, nothing mysterious about it. They don't veil their activities at all anymore.
They told you what they're going to do. Yeah. And they've done it.
Oh, they've done it. They continue to do it.
It's outrageous. All right, let's go to the phones again. 800-313-9443. Got a question or a comment for Eustace Mullins. Gene, hello, you're on the program.
Yes, I have a comment, a question. I've heard that Congressman Charles Rangel, a Democrat, he's either drafting, he's writing, or he's going to introduce a draft bill in Congress. And so this is the only way they're going to get any manpower, of course, to having a war with Iran. And I believe all it would take would be another major catastrophe like 9/11, Machiavellian type situation.
Yeah, they call that a Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, just like Pearl Harbor. In fact, right after 9/11 happened, I don't know if people realize this, but right after 9/11 happened, they were calling it modern day Pearl Harbor.
Oh, if I have it was in all the newspapers, those very words.
And Pearl Harbor was a setup, of course, like you know, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So, and all of a sudden they stopped using that term Pearl Harbor for 9/11.
Yeah, it was too revealing. It told too much.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And this is the only way they're going to get any kind of positive outlook to go to war with Iran is to have another major catastrophe and a draft. They're going to have a draft, I do believe, also. I do believe it might happen during the before Bush Jr. leaves office. And
yeah,
that's just my
possible.
Personal opinion.
It's
now,
possible. Now they're talking also about this imminent threat of the bird flu, that it's more vicious, more real than we thought. Mr. Leavitt has said this repeatedly now, scaring the public, getting them ready for something new. We're being attacked.
Oh, no, they've got figures, 95 million casualties.
Yep, they've come right out.
Figures already.
I want to mention also that Bush Jr. today, March 13, 2006, he said that ideologies that could lead to terrorism should be basically outlawed. Now, listen, ideologies are belief systems.
Yes.
They can be political or religious or both. Now, what is he trying to do, saying that we don't have a right to have certain ideologies that the government, the federal government, or Bush Jr., or some administration could determine would be hate the speech and lead to terrorism? In other words, they could just say this speech or that speech is outlawed because it could lead to terrorism.
Well, that's like he's talking about himself, isn't he, Gene?
What, sir?
Isn't he referring to himself?
Well, of course he is.
Well, he certainly is, because he addressed the graduating class of West Point in 2000, and he frightened the whole world by boasting that he was going to declare war against 69 countries because they were supporting terrorism.
Well,
he was going to declare war on 69 countries.
Yeah.
And they got terrified in France and England at this speech of Bush's. And I was never president of this country, by the way.
Well,
I read it in Tokyo. I read it in a Tokyo newspaper.
Really? Well, it's very scary when somebody says that, you know, ideologies that could lead to terrorism or should be outlawed or should be a crime, maybe even.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get the where we're, just like in Europe and Canada, where you can't deny certain historic events like the Holocaust unless you go to prison.
That's going to be a thought crime.
Yeah,
1984.
Don't you think where this is leading? Don't you think that what he said
is the way they want to go?
This?
Oh yes.
And also, comment on the neoconservatives, the Zionist neoconservatives that took over the Republican Party. I think you stated that it happened during the Ronald Reagan administration.
Yes, that was the Trotskyite wing of the Communist Party. It was not a Zionist conspiracy, it was a Trotskyite conspiracy. Because, you see, Trotsky was murdered by Stalin in 1941. And so Trotsky became a martyr, Mm-hmm. And so the Zionists turned against Moscow communism and put all their hopes in Israel. They became Zionists overnight.
Mm-hmm.
So now they control both major parties, don't they?
Oh, yes.
They've done that a long time. Yeah.
And one more item right quick. These Zionists like you say, Richard Pearl and Paul Wolfowitz, I think he's these dual citizenships. Talk about how these people have these dual citizenships that want us to go to war with they wanted to go to war with Iraq and they did, but now they want to go with the war with Iran. They're trying to take out Israelized enemies. What they're trying to do?
Oh, certainly, all the Arab countries.
Yeah, they're trying to take out Israelized enemies. Even Cindy Sheehan did not get any bad press until she made the statement
mm-hmm.
that her son died for Israeli, that
that's
her
right.
son was killed
exactly
to
right.
take
they
out Israeli's enemy, Iraq. And when
yep.
she made that statement, when she got the bad press.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that interesting? You could be un-American, anti-American, pro-Viet Cong, whatever. Just don't be anti-Israel, huh?
Exactly. That's right. Israel is a crossing point. You can't go.
So much for the peace activists among these Zionists, huh?
Yeah, and by the way, Iran is Israeli's enemy also. So
no
the United
kidding.
States military will be taking out another one of Israeli's enemies. They're not our enemy at all. Iraq wasn't our enemy, as you know, and neither is Iran.
No.
They've not threatened this country really at all.
And the United States government is saber-rattling now and demanding with Europe for action at the United Nations. What business is it of the United States or the world to police other nations? I still don't understand that one. That one's a tough
one. Yeah, Rick, that's right. And to dictate what kind of government they have,
yep.
to dictate whether they have nuclear weapons or not.
Right.
I mean, who gives the United States government or any government the right to do that?
Well, let the United Nations come up and say America must give up unilaterally, give up its nuclear arsenal, and see how far that goes.
Yeah, we wouldn't want the same treatment from any other country, would we?
No, I don't
think that's
so.
Called hypocrisy.
Yes, indeed, Gene. You are right on the money, sir. Thank you very much for your call. Boy, he really spelled it out.
Oh, he really got it. But, you know, Bush formally announced in October of 2002, he stated, our mission is to defend Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the whole basis for the Iraq War.
That's right. And Father Bush said the same thing, by the way.
Oh, yes.
You know, when the war ended, the first Gulf War, and then he called this Madrid Peace Conference, and he told Israel's leaders to attend, Shamir and all those, Bibi Netanyahu, they all came with grim faces. But Bush told them, this is Papa Bush, he said, look, we went to war for you. We destroyed your enemy. Now come to the peace table. Make it look good.
Oh, yeah.
Put on a good show. And they did for a while. And then, of course, that fizzled right out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just like the Oslo Accords have been violated repeatedly by Israel. And Hamas was created by Israel.
Oh, yeah.
Hamas was created by them, just
certainly.
Like the PLO came into being because of Israel's stealing of land, and PLO became the enemy. Then they negotiated with the PLO, formed the Hamas group to counter the PLO. Now they say they won't negotiate with the Hamas group because it, too, is terrorist. Well, obviously, this is a con game. And anybody who can't see it after 55 years has to have his head examined, that's for sure. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we'll be back with more. Eustace Mullins, our guest. Any question on your mind, he'd love to hear from you. He just turned 83, and he's as spry as ever. 1-800-313-9443. I'll be back with him, Rick Adams, Radio Avenger, the Paul Revere of Talk Radio. Stay with us.
Pretty hard and knocking them right out of the park. Rick Adams is on, right on base, on point, on RBNLive.com.
Indeed, we are. Rick Adams and Eustace Mullins, quite a dynamic duo here tonight. Eustace, you mentioned the state of America's readiness. We're in more trouble than we can imagine, I think, because we have so many enemies now we never had before. And we are making new enemies daily as we continue bombing Afghanistan, bombing Iraq, We see this divisive internecine warfare now going on in Iraq. And Bush says, gee whiz, it's the troublemakers. It's the insurgents, you know. I had nothing to do with it. I didn't know. We didn't know, you know. And the American public isn't buying it, as you can see. Poll numbers dropping more all the time. So there is that danger that George Bush and the boys at the CIA might very well pull something like another 9/11. And this time they want to shut down the Internet. They want to shut down a free speech. They want to shut down America, you know.
Oh, they're starting to do.
Yep. And we can't allow them to do this. We really cannot permit them to take our freedoms and threaten us with, you know, bird flu, threaten us with all sorts of attacks as never before, frighten the American public into submission, because that's all they're doing, is frightening us all into submission. Now, I'm not frightened, and I know you're not frightened, Eustace, because you know what's going on.
Well, we've,
and you know,
been up against this for a long time.
Yeah, so the vast majority of Americans still can be frightened, you know, at the least little thing, never mind a major incident in the United States. You know, I mean, I remember when we first saw 9/11, how people all of a sudden, Americans started stopping on the road for each other, stopping at red lights, unheard of, you know, stopping at stop signs, giving the other guy the right of way. This was unheard of. But within a few months, they went right back to their old stinking ways, didn't they?
They certainly did. It didn't last long.
No, it didn't. It goes to show you how people can be played upon and their emotions can be manipulated. And when Pearl Harbor happened, that's exactly what took place.
Oh, you know, that was a show like P.T. Barnum.
You realize the America First Committee folded up right away, just like that.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it was sheer terror, sheer fear, sheer bigotry that appealed to the American public. And these,
Carl Zimberg overnight became a non-person.
He even volunteered to go into the service, and Roosevelt wouldn't allow him to go into the Atlantic. He had to go into the Pacific. And I don't know why, for the life of me, he even volunteered to show that he was, quote, patriotic. He didn't have to show that. He was an Americanist, and Roosevelt was a scoundrel and a terrorist, a traitor.
A terrorist, that's exactly what he was.
Striking terror and murder into the hearts of Americans at Pearl Harbor, moving his own vessels out of there, you know, knowing exactly what he was doing. Can you imagine murdering your own people in order to get them to serve Joe Stalin's interests? And that's what George Bush has done. George Bush has done the same thing, as far as I'm concerned.
George Bushes would never have been heard of if it hadn't been for the Harriman family. Mm-hmm. And Jacob Schiff put up the Rothschild money for the Union Pacific Railroad, and then the Harrimans made so much money they had to have somebody manage it. So they hired George Herbert Walker Bush to manage all their money, and he did it very well. And so no one had ever heard of the Bush family before that operation.
Well, you heard of Prescott Bush in your day, Prescott, when you were a young man, didn't you?
Prescott Bush was a tycoon.
Yeah. He was quite the entrepreneur, wasn't he?
Oh, he really was. I list all of his different directorships in my World Order book.
Yeah. He had quite a litany repertoire there.
Well, Pennsylvania Lightpower, all the biggest corporations on the East Coast.
And what about financing Lenin with the bullion, the gold?
Oh, yes.
I mean, here was something that was absolutely unheard of. These so-called capitalists who were financing the Bolshevik Revolution.
Yeah, they were going to kill all the bankers.
Oh, yeah. Not the ones that were feeding them, though, huh?
Not at all.
I mean, when, you know, Anthony Sutton, a good friend of ours, when he wrote his first books, you know, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution.
Oh, that was a terrific book.
He documented all of it, and they just ignored it.
The Bushes were very prominent in that Wall Street and the rise of communism.
Bolshevik, yeah.
Bolshevism.
And Wall Street and the rise of Hitler. Now, they're still denying that the banks had anything to do, the German Jewish International European banks, with the rise of Hitler. I just saw another article the other day on teaching people about the Holocaust. And here this author from the, I think it was the New York Times, Mr. Weiss, said, you know, you still get these people that say that the Jewish banks had something to do with Hitler. And I said, my God, how do they lie with just a straight face and such impunity? Well, they know that was the case.
Well, Max Sporberg and Max Oppenheimer, two Jewish bankers in Germany, were they financed Hitler entirely.
And it's all on record.
It's a record.
It's mind-boggling, Eustace, the way these journalists, so-called journalists, if they can truly call themselves that, how they lie with impunity.
Well, they have to lie because they know the truth. And man, Warburg Company and Oppenheimer Company are the two biggest banking firms in Germany today.
Right, right. Absolutely. Eustace, do you have any more time?
Well, I think we've pretty well covered everything.
Okay, all right. If you want, we'll let you go, and we'll be in touch, and we'll get back to you on your website.
All right,
we'll
have a real
definitely help you. It's a great show. What's your address? What's your address?
126 Madison Place, Stanton, Virginia, 24401.
All right, Eustace, thank you. We'll talk to you again. Bye-bye. We'll be right back with more. I'm Rick Adams.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
And we're back to Chitty Chatty again. With you, our great listenership here at RBN. RBNLive.com. And I'm going to get back to giving you that address again because we wanted to do it at least a couple of times since at the time that we're speaking now, Eustace does not have an internet site or an email address that you could email him if you wish to purchase any books. And we'd rather not give his number out on the air publicly. So we will definitely repeat his street address. Once it's up here on the screen, I'm going to read it to you and keep reading it to you until you get it. No, I'm only kidding. All right, we're going to go right back to that screen. I'm dealing with my screen here, my TV screen, my computer screen, ladies and gentlemen. Ah, the convenience of modern technology, huh? Well, that's what it's all about. We're going to give you that address right now. It is 126 Madison Place, like James Madison. Stanton, Virginia, 24401. I believe that's spelled S-T-A-U-N-T-O-N, Virginia. And that zip code again is 24401. That's for Eustace Mullins. All right, how does that sound? Good? Excellent. All right, now we do have some time together. We don't often do this, but we do, and this week is a busy week. I think tomorrow night, in fact, I know tomorrow night, we have booked on the program, let's see, I believe, what's his name again, Paul? What's his name? Tepetti. Paul Tepetti from Poker Face, the band, the group, that apparently has been banned. So they've been banned from university, Rutgers, I believe. They've been on RBN a couple of times. They wanted to come on my show. So we are affording them that opportunity to do so tomorrow night. Then Wednesday night, we're planning to talk to, once again, Lindsey Williams, the energy non-crisis. And boy, let me tell you, his latest video has been just absolutely great. The new information he has, he's updated it. We aired it on our television show locally, and it brought about a very good reaction. So not everyone is stupid. You know, people are beginning to wake up, and people are beginning to question. And that's the important thing. If you don't question anything that the media moguls tell you, then I'm going to tell you something. You're in rough shape. There's no question you are in rough shape if you don't question anything. You have to question what's being spoon-fed to you. And this is the big problem in our nation today with brain-dead Americans. They just simply don't question anything. The government puts out contradictory information, blatantly contradicting something it put out the same day, earlier that day, and they don't even bat an eyelash. I mean, it's just incredible. This is what we deal with on a daily basis. Also, we're going to be getting, hopefully, Chaplain Klingerschmidt on the program. Remember, he's the one who has been involved with United States Armed Services and having to do with the chaplains being denied the opportunity to pray publicly in the name of Jesus Christ. That is interesting. We hope to be able to hook up with him late in the week as well. Here's something for you. Bill Cosby said the following, all right? This is from him, actor Bill Cosby. And these are his words. These are not mine, but I thought I would share them with our listeners tonight, okay? This is what I have from Bill Cosby and his words. Looks like New Orleans is waking people up. That's what Cosby says. We can't blame white people. Wednesday, September 7th, 2005. This is a little bit old now, but not really. He said they're standing on the corner and they can't speak English. I can't talk the way these people talk. Why you ain't, where you is, what he drive, where he stay, where he work, who you be. And I blamed the kid until I heard the mother talk. And then I heard the father talk. Everybody knows it's important to speak English except these knuckleheads. You can't be a doctor with that kind of crap coming out of your mouth. In fact, you will never get any kind of job making a decent living. People marched and were hit in the face with rocks to get an education. And now we've got these knuckleheads walking around. The lower economic people are not holding up their end in this deal. These people are not parenting. They're buying things for their kids. $500 sneakers for what? And they won't spend $200 for Hooked on Phonics. I'm talking about these people who cry when their son is standing there in an orange suit. Where were you when he was 2? Where were you when he was 12? Where were you when he was 18 and how come you didn't know that he had a pistol? And where's the father? Or who is the father? People putting their clothes on backward, isn't that a sign of something going wrong? People with their hats on backward, pants down, around the crank, isn't that a sign of something? Or are you waiting for Jesus to pull his pants up? Isn't it a sign of something when she has her dress all the way up and get all type of needles piercing going through her body? What part of Africa did this come from? We are not Africans. Those people are not Africans. They don't know a thing about Africa. With names like Chinakwa, Taliqua, and Muhammad and all of that crap, and all of them are in jail. Brown or black versus the Board of Education is no longer the white person's problem. We have got to take the neighborhood back. People used to be ashamed. Today a woman has 8 children with 8 different husbands or men or whatever you call them now. We have millionaire football players who can't read. We have million-dollar basketball players who can't write 2 paragraphs. We as black folks have to do a better job. Someone working at Walmart with 7 kids, you are hurting us. We have to start holding each other to a higher standard. We can no longer blame the white people. Any longer. All right. And that was sent to me by a dear individual whom I know. You've got to admire him, Bill Cosby. Hey, he has some. He has a way with words. And Bill Cosby isn't making this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen, as you know. As you know, it is pathetic to see the generation of dumbed-down young people today. Not all, and not just blacks or whites or Hispanics, but certainly right across the board. Well, from the sublime to the ridiculous. Bill O'Reilly, mass murder is the sane thing to do. You heard me right. By Kurt Nimmo. It is now obvious Fox News' loudmouth Bill O'Reilly is a dangerous sociopath. He should be removed immediately from both television and radio. You know, in a sane world, every country would unite against Iran and blow it off the face of the earth. That would be the same thing to do. Just go in and remove the government because this is a terrorist state, said Bill O'Reilly on his radio program a couple of days back. In Bizarro world, it is sane to kill hundreds of thousands of people. It is normal. to invade countries, predicated on nothing more than lies, dissimulation, and fabrication. Because Fox News and the rest of the corporate media tell us over and over ad nauseum that Iran has nukes. This does not make it so. In fact, according to the IAEA and its Director General, Mohammed El-Baradei, there is no evidence that Iran is pursuing nuclear weapons. It is well known, for those who pay attention, that the whole Iranian nuke ruse began with accusations made by a spokesman for the cultish and Marxist Mujahideen Ekalag, officially listed by the State Department as a terrorist group itself. But Bill O'Reilly didn't know that, apparently. He didn't realize that once again we are being lied to about Iran, just as we were lied to about Iraq. You remember Bill Clinton and how we set up the Iraqi National Congress in exile, and we set up this propaganda industry? Well, once again, it turns out to be another lie. And Bill O'Reilly says, in a sane world, that's what we should do. Bomb them into the Stone Age. Now, who's the insane man? The Iranian leader or Bill O'Reilly? The oafish Bill O'Reilly knows nothing about Iran or its national pride. For O'Reilly and millions of his seriously deluded listeners and viewers, Iran is an amorphous blob ruled by evil mullahs. He does not think about what the result would be if the United States bombed Iran, quote, off the face of the earth, unquote. He apparently does not care that such an action would result in thousands of dead people, a few mullahs, but mostly innocent men, women, and children. Bill O'Reilly is a dangerous sociopath, and I agree with this author. Passed on by Professor William Beeman, by the way, who is has been an advisor to the United States government with Iran. As you know, he's appeared on this program and this network several times. And this column was by Kurt Nimmo. And I think it's just excellent. By the way, you can read it at uruknet.info. Uruknet.info. Very fascinating information, to say the least. All right. Do we have callers, Paul? Good. We don't. Excellent. That gives me a chance to mouth off some more, huh? All right. Okay. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the situation that we are dealing with here today in America is a very, very dangerous one because, as you can see, the kingdoms of this world now are being brought together by these globalists, the internationalists, the one-worlders, the Zionists. All of them are pushing for this togetherness. And, boy, how many times have I told you about this? How many times have I told you about the 59-page document? How many times? To unite the United States, Canada, Mexico, in a regional entity of globalism. I've told you about it umpteen times. And yet, even as I speak now, there are people who simply just think that it can't happen. It cannot happen here, they say. It's not going to happen to America. When I told you last week that that's exactly what's happening, that what we are having now to deal with is a massive illegal invasion into the United States, that surely is a sign of a nation in decline. When that nation cannot guard or protect its own borders, then you know darn right well that nation cannot defend herself. And here we are talking about invading and bombing other nations that have never done anything to the United States. And if they have done anything, it's only because we are in their backyard and we, the United States, are occupying one of their nations. Now, I know Iran is not Iraq. And I know that Iraq is not to be confused with Iran. Iraq is an Arab country. Iran is a Persian country. Nevertheless, you must recognize that. You must recognize certain basic facts that what is going on today with Iran is what we have already done with Iraq and what we're planning to do to Syria. You understand now? You get the message? You comprehend? Good. 1-800-313-9443 is our number. And hello, Clinton, you're on the program.
Hello, Rick.
Yes.
What's
on your mind tonight, Clinton?
A couple things. I'd like to ask you and to spread to your peers and colleagues, get into the habit of making the announcement about the date and the day that you're doing your particular show. Because, you know, you often rerun these, and I sit around, like the other night I sat around with the headphones on my, waiting for you to pick up. The phone rang, you know, 150 times until I finally realized, hey, wait a minute.
Well, I announced
this is a replay.
That, Thursday night at the end of the show, the last 15 minutes, several times I announced that we would not be live Friday night. So I did that, and, you know... Sometimes, you know, that happens. I don't do it often.
Yeah,
once every few weeks I wind up taking off a day.
It'd be a good thing to do it on either the intro or the outro when you come back in from your bumper time.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, anyhow, then that said, the guest you had on the other night about the subliminal stuff.
Yeah.
What I wanted to do is respond to that. In the 80s, I... did some research about this because, you know, they put me through an experimental program, and it affected me. So I started to look into what happened to me.
Well, wait a minute. Who did this and why did they
do
this?
Well, when I left the prison system, you know, they experiment on people in the prisons, and I was a person that was involved in an experimental program. You see a lot of these things that they call boot camps on today. Well, they started doing those and determining the proper way to run them so that they could achieve their effective goal. And the effective goal is to, they impart nervous breakdowns in people. I suffered a couple of them. You put enough pressure on people and you'll start having these anomalies in your thinking processes, and most people just call it a nervous breakdown, is where you start to lose control of your cognitive thinking abilities, and then they impart their trigger messages, okay? But anyhow, what I did was I started to look at the subliminal of effects, and what I found out was... not that they're not involved in attempting to do subliminal audio tracks, but that it's not effective at all. It's you look at how the human ear works. When the sound wave enters the ear, the little bones vibrate, right? And the vibrations are recognized by the brain, and they have a specific frequency and amplitude and so on and so forth. And the meaning is imparted only through the general consensus that all of us agree through this phenomenon that we understand as hearing.
Very true.
What
you'll have to hold. You'll have to hold during the break, Lynn. I'll be back with you in just 3 minutes more on Uncensored Radio Free America here on RVNLive.com. I'm Rick Adams.
Rick Adams is back.
Radio Avenger, the Paul Revere of talk radio.
Okay, we're back now, and Clinton, you still with me?
Yeah, hi, Rick.
All right, go ahead. Now, you were talking about the subliminal part of this, and
right.
What did you want to say?
Well, I started a research the actual physics involved in the transmission of the signal and the reception of the signal, the subliminal audio tracks. And I talked to some audio engineers, and I looked at some physiological issues. And I was talking before the break on the way that we actually hear. The process is a phenomenon. That's the sound wave enters the ear, and these little bones vibrate in the ear. And its frequency is something that our brain learns to recognize as a pattern, and then the associative learning process is involved, and we associate a particular sound frequency with the meaning of semantics of some word. That's actually the phenomena of hearing. It's how it works. Well, what I found out, which is what I wanted to pose to your guest, was if he ever looked at this theory that I developed, because I went to talk to some audio engineers, and we've discussed this, and we all of us seem to agree that the subliminal audio is not possible unless you're using extremely high-quality gear to play the signal back, because the human ear, the lower threshold is something like 20 to 20,000 hertz is the range that we can hear at.
Yeah.
And the subliminal track is recorded much lower than the 20 hertz, down around 5 or 10 hertz, so it can't be consciously heard
right,
at all.
Right, consciously, yes.
99.9% of all audio gear will not play a frequency in that range. So if anything comes through, it's a distorted signal such that if the word that was intended to be projected to the victim was the word thrill, T-H-R-I-L-L, for example, it could hypothetically be interpreted by the brain as similar in phonetics to the word kill, K-I-L-L. This is a theory on my part. I just wanted to add.
Oh, well, we'll have him back. Steve, I think that was Steve Jacobson, right?
Yeah.
We'll get him back at some point and get his professional view on this and others as well. But it is a very powerful propaganda medium. People are being bombarded with messages all the time subliminally.
It's dangerous. What they did to me really screwed me up for a real long time. They put you through what they would. They call sociodrama and psychodrama and all these constructs that they've developed in order to break down the cognitive thought process.
Let me ask you this before we run out of time. Did they use psychotropic drugs on you too?
I don't know. It could have been in our food, but we weren't given anything directly unless we were there were person there taking medications, yes, but I was not administered anything directly.
As far as you were aware, right?
As far as I was aware of.
Yeah, okay, very interesting. Because that is also something that is being done now, the psychotropic drugs. Been done for a long time. And the way they influence people and destroy their minds. They actually destroy their minds.
The prison systems are full of people that are doped up. Back in the 80s, which is the big one, was Thorazine and drugs in that drug family. But I can imagine what they're using now.
Well, we will get into it again with him, I'm sure, in the weeks ahead, Clinton. So be listening, and we'll let you know.
Stay on the lookout, Rick. Thank you.
All right. Good night. And ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow night we will be back. Poker Face, and we'll talk about the latest controversy affecting that group. Until then, this is your host and producer, Rick Adams, your producer for the program, not your pickup producer, wishing you all a very good night.